Welcome to another episode of The Brand Called You, a podcast and podcast show that brings you leadership lessons, knowledge, experience, and wisdom from hundreds of successful individuals from around the world. I am your host, Ashutosh Garg, and today I'm privileged to welcome a very, very senior professional from the financial community, Mr. Robert E. Dout from Shanghai, China. Robert, welcome to the show.
Thank you very much. I appreciate the chance to be here.
Thank you. Robert is the managing partner of Asia Plus Capital Limited, and he's worked for over 20 years in China. So Robert, we're going to speak about two things today. One is China and your experience there. And second, we'll talk about Asia Plus Capital. So Let's start with China. You've lived there for over two decades. What was the motivation to move from US to China?
You know, there is a famous Western author, Horace Greeley, and he used to say, go west, young man. Mm. Well, being the contrarian that I am, I decided I'd go east, young man. Okay. And decided to go there. There was, I think, opportunity there in terms of what we were doing. Mm-hmm. I liked the change. Like a lot of people, every time I go to a bookstore, I'd pick up a book on China and see what was going on and the growth potential. And actually had the very first, they're called directional drill machines in China to drill horizontally, put in fiber optic and a lot of those type of things. And it's a situation where if I knew how little I knew, I probably would have never done it. But I guess that's what moves the species forward.
Amazing. And you know, when you came into China, you came in at the time when the country was just about beginning to open up everything, or 10 years after that.
Yes, exactly.
What has it been like to do business in China?
Well, it makes doing business in Iowa or the United States here seem like child's play for starters there. Mm-hmm. But the fact of the matter is there's really more capitalism in China. It's just the nature of the culture than you see here in the States. It's competitive, it's hardworking. And the thing that I liked about it so very, very much is the electricity. A lot of people would go over there and they'd see the pollution, they'd see all the people. I didn't even see that. All I saw was the electricity and the opportunities. Mm-hmm. And that was kind of one of the things that really kept me there in China.
Fascinating. And you know, I have been to China at least 40 or 50 times since 1989, mm-hmm. when I first went there. Mm-hmm. I have observed some changes as an outsider, but I'd love to understand what are some of the significant changes you have experienced in the last two decades?
Well, you know, it's interesting, Ash. I don't think ever in the history of the world in 20 years, and I'm going to say maybe even the last 10 years in particular, mm-hmm. has there ever been that much change in one particular country. And it was very interesting seeing all that change in terms of one infrastructure, in terms of the airports, the highways, the subways, the fast trains, all that sort of thing. How that has grown in the last 10 years is just, it's amazing to me. Mm-hmm. And again, it's kind of a reflection on the culture and what's going on there. And also it's a reflection, I think a lot of the leadership in China is trained as engineers. I think in a very linear, efficient type fashion. And I think that's been a big driver in terms of the logistics, the capabilities, and how it has moved there. Kind of as a little aside, I had a friend of mine in Shanghai say to me once a few years back, he said, wait a second here now. The greatest growth of any country ever in the world in the last 10 years has been in China. And you've been in China the last 10 years. She says, you should really be a lot more successful than you are.
A little presumptuous for him to say that, isn't it?
But there may be some truth in it.
Okay. So, you know, moving on, again, coming back to your 20 years in China.
Yeah.
China has consistently attracted in excess of $40 to $50 billion of foreign capital every year. Yeah. Mm-hmm. What makes China such an attractive destination?
Yeah, it's interesting. I saw some numbers the other day, and the FDI is still way, way up there. It's intriguing. I think it's the growth coefficients. I mean, even this year with the COVID situation, they're still pegging themselves at greater than 6%. Mm-hmm. And I think there's an area of the country in the world that's going to come close to that in terms of growth. So you've got the growth coefficient. You got a huge middle class, a bigger middle class than you do in the United States right now. And, you know, as much as you could argue or not agree with the government and argue against all the things going on, at least you can say there is political stability. And that's something that investors like, is stability.
Correct.
So I think those might be three drivers, certainly in terms of the growth there. So,
okay. And moving on to another question, which is that in an increasingly polarized world, what are some of the challenges that China faces?
Well, that's a really good question. I think China needs a really good PR person right now. Mm-hmm. You know, the perceptions it's out there in terms of what's happened in the South China Sea, basically with the Hong Kong situation. You could argue that the Belt and Road isn't too terribly different than British imperialism 150 years ago. You know, they're not doing this for Uzbekistan or Madagascar. You know that. So, I mean, it's an interesting deal because I think China does have some perception problems they've got to work on. And that, interesting enough, on the flip side of that is we're working with a lot of companies that have been in China that are now looking at moving to other places in ASEAN, whether it's Vietnam, Malaysia, India, even. Lots of changes going on in that regard. So a lot of opportunities there for, I think, other places. But it boils down to, you know, China looks out for China. And that's an interesting comment. And at first I thought, oh, that's maybe not good. And then I thought about it. I thought, you know, you as a father, you look out for your family. Or as a business owner, you look out for your business. And there's nothing wrong with a country looking out for itself.
Correct.
And but there are some concerns now in terms of, I think, perception of what is going on and what really is going on too. So
that's it. So, you know, initially when Deng Xiaoping started to open up China, for mm-hmm. a long time, the reason for a company's moving other than the big market was cheap mm-hmm. costs.
Yes.
But costs in China have gone up very significantly.
Mm-hmm.
You know, from being the world's factory, as you just mentioned, people are moving their factories to other countries.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. What will be the impact of rising costs in China?
Well, it's a huge factor now. If you look at fully loaded wages in the Shanghai area, I mean, they've just skyrocketed, quite frankly, relative to a lot of other areas. And so you're seeing a couple things going on. You're seeing a lot of companies moving, certainly the low-tech type things to Bangladesh, to Vietnam, to a lot of other places. You're seeing a huge interest in China in automation. You know, this, I think, was last year, the year before, was the first year ever that their labor pool actually decreased mm-hmm. in size. And so they've got some real concerns about that as well. You know, the complicating thing is China does have great logistics. They've got trained labor. They've got supply chains in place, all those sorts of things that companies need. You can't just up and move, mm-hmm. you know, to another place without those things being in place. Mm-hmm. And so that's kind of the positive thing. And on the flip side, it's getting expensive, period.
I agree. So I've got two more questions on China before I move to your business.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, for a long time, it was believed that China's economy was sustaining itself on exports.
Mm-hmm.
But now I was reading an article where they say that the domestic market is so large that China can sustain itself. Mm-hmm. I'd love to get your perspective.
Yeah, two things. You know, I've always thought, you know, the government in China really kind of had three levers. One was foreign direct investment, which is still there to some degree, though down a little bit. Building infrastructure, you know, and of course they've built about as much infrastructure as you could, or consumer demand. And though the consumer demand seems to be growing, it's still there. I think an issue that is really keeping the leaders in Beijing up at night mm-hmm. is this issue is China going to get rich before they get old?
Correct.
And I mean, Japan's an aging country, but I think you could argue that they've gotten rich before they got old. And the big issue in China is going to be, are they going to get rich? And I'm using that parenthetically, before they get old. And so it'll be interesting to see what plays out on that, I think, on that spectrum. So. Mm-hmm.
And my last question to you is, the pandemic. Mm-hmm. Has the pandemic really affected business in China?
Some businesses were devastated. Obviously, a lot of the hospitality type places. Other businesses, I've got one company I've been working with in the powertrain business. And because their competitors, both in, let's say, in India and in Europe, and were shut down almost totally, their business was up significantly. Wow. And the China demand was still there. Mm-hmm. So it's, I think they've certainly done better than I think most other places in the world, but it has been a drag. And now this variant that they're talking about it knocking the GDP down here the third quarter and fourth quarter. So it I guess to be seen, to be determined. So
okay, so let's move on and let's talk about your company, Asia Plus mm-hmm. Capital Limited.
Yeah, my favorite topic.
Well, absolutely. So, and I was reading about you and your business. You are a, I quote, strategic financial and M&A advisory with a focus on North America and Asia operating from China. Mm-hmm. So tell me first, what were the reasons you set up this kind of a business with this kind of an objective? And what have been some of your challenges as you built this venture?
Well, it's interesting. I saw an opportunity. And opportunity was cross-border from basically primarily the U.S., mm-hmm. some Europe to China. And our business has evolved, I guess, like a lot of businesses. And it started out initially, we were doing a lot of work with Western firms looking to form joint ventures or make acquisitions in China. Mm-hmm. And then we had a period of time where we were doing a lot of work with Chinese companies going out to the world, making acquisitions in other places, primarily the States and Europe. And now we're working with actually a lot of, a big part of this right now is Western companies moving their operations to other places, whether it's India, Eastern Europe, other places in ASEAN, Mexico, selling their operations in China. So it's kind of been an evolution of sorts in terms of what we're doing. And we're always trying to stay on top of the opportunities wherever they may lie. So,
and some of your challenges as you were building this business?
Oh, lots of challenges in China.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
No question about it here. Number one, it's a very relationship-based economy. So mm-hmm. in terms of getting to know people and getting building good relationships, and it's interesting that sometimes I wonder why I keep working, but I've got so many relationships now in China, and I've helped so many people with their kids going to colleges and all this sort of thing, that now all of a sudden I've got some really strong relationships, and I don't want to just let them disappear, so to speak. There, it's a very entrepreneurial country, as you know, so everybody is a competitor, basically. Every employee you have is technically a competitor, it's frustrating to some degree. My language skills are not, I don't read and write worth a darn. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I tell my employees, I bet you never thought you'd work for an illiterate person. Mm-hmm. But it's worked fine. Yeah. And in that regard. So,
and like you've had some challenges, what have been some of your key learnings in China?
Is how important it is to persevere, how important it is to be truthful about what you're doing. Mm-hmm. One of the things when I first started doing business there, I thought it was very curious. In the underground, the directional drill business, there was a lot of money changing hands. Mm-hmm. And we were very strict from the beginning that we were not playing that game. Mm-hmm. And it was very interesting. Everybody said, oh no, that's gonna be a problem. And it actually ended up being a very strong asset for us, because everybody understood that we were straight, and this was the number, and this is how it worked. So it actually worked out very, very well. So,
okay. And which are the sectors that you have focused on?
We're really generalists.
Okay.
I people ask me that. What types of deals do you do? I stay out of deals that I don't understand. Mm-hmm. So if it's an exceptionally high tech thing and you can't explain it to me in an elevator pitch, probably not going to do it. I don't do real estate. I don't do pharmaceutical again because it gets kind of complicated sometimes, and I'm just not sure there's not somebody that's got a better idea in his garage somewhere that might come up. But we're generalists, and I tell people that we do deals that we think we can get to the finish line. And we're a middle market company. By middle market, we say our deals are basically 100 million to, let's say, 300-400 million USD. That's our deal size. Okay. We don't compete with Goldman Sachs, JP Morgan, but for bigger size deals than just the guy in the corner. So
interesting. And my last question before I move to the next segment.
Yeah.
With all the increased restrictions that are beginning to be seen with China, and there's so much of geopolitical pressure coming. In fact, China has 14 countries that have boundaries or water boundaries with it.
Yeah.
And there are disputes with every country.
Yeah.
What do you see will be the impact on doing global business from sitting in China?
Well, it's interesting. The first of this year, we actually we used to be China Plus Capital. We changed our name to Asia Plus Capital. Mm-hmm. We thought it read a little better in terms of what we were doing. And also because we're actually starting to do a fair amount of business in Vietnam, mm-hmm. In Thailand, in Malaysia, and some other places. India, as a matter of fact, sold a nice company to a large Indian buyer. Mm-hmm. So we kind of changed our brand a little bit there, so to speak, to widen our horizons in terms of perception by others. China's never been an easy place to work. It's never really been a level playing field. I think everybody understood that. Mm-hmm. But I actually think that it's getting a little more difficult to work there. And I don't see that changing, quite frankly.
Okay. So, Robert, I'm now going to move to the last segment. All our viewers and listeners mm-hmm. love to understand my guest a little more. So I have a few questions, but I call questions for you personally.
Okay.
My first question is that as you look back at a life well lived, what would you say are three key milestones or pivot points in your life or your career?
I think I'm going to nail that down to, because you can separate into your personal life and your business life, a lot of different things there. And I guess maybe for the benefit of some of the people listening there, I think moving to an entrepreneurial status was certainly a milestone, going from getting a paycheck to creating a paycheck and making that move. Number two, going to China was certainly a defining moment for me in terms of my life. I had done some work in Russia. That was a little bit, that was difficult. Going to China certainly is one. And then I wouldn't call it a couple of years ago in terms of a milestone, as I'm going to call it a halftime. I kind of became more interested in giving than getting. Moving from, I use the word success to significance, mm-hmm. Which is somebody else's wording, not mine, but those I think would be the three key milestones, at least for me.
Okay. And what have been some of the core values that you have believed in as you have built your business?
I am a positivity. I'm a very positive person, and I look at it as my job to part of my job is to be a positive influence in other people's lives. You know how important some people are, just they exude negative energy, and I try to exude positive energy to people. And you become the average of the five people you hang around with, and always hang around, positive people. I try to do that. Concern for others. As I've gotten older, I've got more of a concern for others. You recognize that it is a fine line sometimes between success and failure. Mm-hmm. And then perseverance. you know, I've been over there in China a long time, which is a tough place to work. And I just keep plugging along here. And maybe it's because I'm not smart enough to know the difference here. But I would say perseverance is a core value.
Fantastic. Yeah. I have time for three more questions. My next question is that in a life well lived, achieved a lot, even though your friend may have said that you haven't, you know, made more money than you should have. When you look back at your life, what does success mean to Robert?
Yeah, that's an interesting question. I think it's to have lived an honest life, both with others and yourself, providing a value add to your family, your friends, and to society, and doing the best you can do with the tools that you have. And some of us have a little better tool belt than others. Some people have the benefit of, you know, a better opportunities than others, but doing the very best you can with what you were given. So I think that would be my definition of success.
And a follow-up question to success is who or what inspires you to keep
pushing? People like you, for starters.
Thank you. Thank you.
Reading your book, I'm loving it a lot. Uh-huh. I am a big fan. Anytime, I'm an underdog guy.
Okay.
And whenever there's a match, I don't care if it's a cricket match, I don't care if it's a football game, I don't care what it is. I don't care if it's a Tour de France. I'm an underdog guy. Okay. And I love to see people win that don't do it. I was a judge a number of years ago at the Winter Olympics, which was fantastic. And I used to love it when the little countries would win medals, because it was such a huge, huge, huge deal. And so I guess I'm anybody that's an underdog that beats the odds and does it is a hero in my book, period.
Wonderful. Wonderful. You know, this is the first, this answer is I've never received from any other guest. So thank you very much.
Really? 875 of them, huh?
so many of them. And my last question to you, and this is a question on failure. And you and I were discussing this just before we started recording. Mm-hmm. You know, that parents in Asia don't teach children it's okay to fail. Yet we fail and we learn. So my question to you, and thank you for ordering my book on failure. What has been your biggest learning from some of your biggest mistakes?
It's interesting. I think my biggest learning, and if I could go back and redo stuff, is I was not thinking big enough. And so many times I involved deals and it could have become much, much, much bigger than I thought it could be. And, you know, sometimes it was intrigued, you know, sometimes you got there's a fear of failure, but there's sometimes a fear of success. In looking back, I wasn't thinking big enough. And I would encourage everybody that's there. And here I was in China with all this tremendous, tremendous, tremendous growth and so many opportunities. And I think you can go to India now and there's just, you know, the opportunities are still there. They're just different than they were 5 years ago or 10 years ago.
Correct.
And, but there's just as many opportunities. And just looking at it and saying, don't forget to think big in terms of what you can do, because that's a holdback. And I look back at some of the things I didn't work out as well as I should have, because I wasn't thinking big enough.
Wonderful. Robert, thank you so much.
Thank you. I appreciate the opportunity. So
thank you. Thank you for the most important takeaway from our conversation, which is think big, but thank you for sharing so much of your knowledge on China. Really appreciate it. Thank you and good luck.
Hey, thanks a lot, Ash. Hope to stay in touch. Bye-bye.
Thank you. Thank you for listening to The Brand Called You videocast and podcast, a platform that brings you knowledge, experience, and wisdom of hundreds of successful individuals from around the world. Do visit our website, www.tbcy.in, to watch and listen to the stories of many more individuals. You can also follow us on YouTube, Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter. Just search for The Brand Called You.